This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, February 5th. We'll start with the front page. A column from Tony Reed and Brendan Moore on the economy. ADM slashes jobs costs. Company braces for global tariff uncertainty. Archer Daniels Midland Company told investors it was battening down the hatches, slashing costs and shedding jobs, as it plowed into a brave new world of trade and tariff uncertainties, made worse by the costs of recovering from a fire at its massive East plant in Decatur. ADM's leadership said it planned to cut up to 700 jobs this year, out of a global workforce of more than 40,000. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe told the Herald and Review on Tuesday that job losses at the city's top employer are never good, but that we are in a much better position as a community and as an area for those people to recover. We've got a lot of job openings, Moore Wolfe said. We've got companies that are looking for good employees. And the ADM employees, they're very good workers, good employees, so it's not like there is no opportunity for them here. Moore Wolfe, who spoke with company officials earlier in the day, said they didn't have a number when it came to how many of the layoffs would be in Decatur, which is home to the company's North American headquarters and is the single largest location and employee base across its global footprint. But this is not doomsday, Moore Wolfe added. There are jobs here that hopefully we can help connect people who are looking for jobs and out of work to those companies. While the timeline for any layoff hasn't been announced, U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski said that shouldn't prevent preparations for the possible action from taking place. I'm focused on understanding the available financial support, placement services, and resources for the affected workers. This is a tough time for many, and it's vital that employees receive sufficient notice to make the best choices for themselves and their families, Budzinski said. Obviously not great news, but we also know that there are 41,000 employees across all of ADM, and they've talked about 700 people being laid off. So we're hoping that those aren't in Illinois or that only a small minority of them are. But we don't know yet, and certainly we want to support companies that are based here in our state, Governor J.B. Pritzker said. I'll also add that the uncertainty that the president is causing because of the tariff threats, not just against Canada, Mexico, and now the ones that have been imposed on China, but also the threats against the European Union. So we're deeply concerned about that and the effect that it'll have on businesses and jobs across the state of Illinois, including for ADM. Illinois Deputy Governor Andy Menar, who, among other responsibilities, oversees state economic development efforts for the governor, told the Herald and Review on Tuesday that we are feeling the impact of unprecedented uncertainty without question. You can't untangle uncertainty that has now been injected into the economy following Donald Trump's inauguration from decisions companies and businesses make about employment, Menar said. You just can't. ADM is hungrily seeking to lessen its own uncertainty by cutting costs after announcing a drop in fourth quarter profit Tuesday. While under pressure from weaker oilseed crush margins along with tax credit uncertainties now surrounding U.S. biofuel policies. One burning issue on the cost front has been the firm's East plant woes, which came up in questions from industry analysts who noted it as a significant headwind. The plant was badly damaged in a major fire in October. The Decatur plant, which is specialty ingredients, that is a big headwind, and until we can bring the plant back, that will continue to be, said Juan Luciano, the ADM CEO, president, and board chairman. Hopefully, the plant will be back in the second quarter, and we expect that will naturally bring an improvement to the results. It's far from the only headwind facing the firm, however, which runs huge agricultural processing operations in Decatur. The keenness of the new President Donald Trump administration to slap tariffs on other countries is sparking fears the world could be headed towards open trade warfare of tit-for-tat tariffs. And the selection of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to be the country's new health secretary doesn't bode well either. Kennedy is on record as repeatedly attacking products like ADM's corn syrup sweeteners, which he claims are poisoning the national diet. Kennedy's nutritional stance didn't come up in industry analyst questions to ADM, but the issue of tariffs was raised. One analyst wondered why ADM's 2025 guidance on results didn't mention them. Yes, our guidance doesn't include any impact on tariffs, as it's so difficult to predict at the moment, Luciano said. He said tariffs imposed by the U.S. government tended to have a positive effect on the firm's bottom line, making imports more pricey. But he said the retaliatory tariffs imposed by foreign markets were a different story, and it was too early yet to tell how big a hole that could punch in ADM's bottom line. The China retaliatory measures don't include agricultural products at this point in time, Luciano noted. ADM is now forecasting its adjusted earnings per share in a more restricted range of 4 to 4.75 for 2025. Analysts had pinned their hopes on earnings of 4.67. And while the company plans to cut expenses by up to $750 million over the next few years, it's working hard in the meantime to sweeten the bank accounts of its shareholders. It announced a 2% increase in its quarterly dividend, the 93rd consecutive year of uninterrupted payouts. And ADM said it extended its current share repurchase program by a massive 100 million shares. We have some photos on the front page of iceless fishing. Jerry Potts fishes in an area where the ice on Lake Decatur is starting to melt at the East Lost Bridge Road boat ramp in Decatur, Tuesday, February 4th. While the ice is disappearing from the lake, the forecast called for freezing drizzle overnight Tuesday that could hamper early morning commutes. From the Associated Press, Ken Moriguzu and Wushang Wu, China counters with tariffs on U.S. products from Beijing. China announced retaliatory tariffs on select American imports and an antitrust investigation into Google on Tuesday, just minutes after a sweeping levy on Chinese products imposed by U.S. President Donald Trump took effect. American tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico were also set to go into effect Tuesday before Trump agreed to a 30-day pause as the two countries acted to address his concerns about border security and drug trafficking. Trump planned to talk with Chinese President Xi Jinping in the coming days. "It's being scheduled and will happen very soon," White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said Tuesday. This isn't the first round of tit-for-tat actions between the two countries. China and the U.S. engaged in an escalating trade war in 2018 when Trump repeatedly raised tariffs on Chinese goods, and China responded each time. This time, analysts said, China is much better prepared, announcing a slew of measures that go beyond tariffs and cut across different sectors of the U.S. economy. The government is also more wary of upsetting its own fragile and heavily trade-dependent economy. It's aiming for finding measures that maximize the impact and also minimize the risk that the Chinese economy may face, said Gary Ng, a senior economist at Natixis Corporate and Investment Banking in Hong Kong. At the same time, China is trying to increase its bargaining chips. John Gong, a professor at the University of International Business and Economics in Beijing, called the response a measured one. "I don't think they want the trade war escalating," he said, "and they see this example from Canada and Mexico, and probably they are hoping for the same thing." China said it would implement a 15% tariff on coal and liquefied natural gas products, as well as a 10% tariff on crude oil, agricultural machinery, and large engine cars imported from the U.S. The tariffs would take effect next Monday. The U.S.'s unilateral tariff increase seriously violates the rules of the World Trade Organization, China's State Council Tariff Commission said in a statement. It is not only unhelpful in solving its own problems, but also damages normal economic and trade cooperation between China and the U.S. The WTO confirmed Tuesday it received notice of China's request for consultations with the United States regarding the tariffs imposed on Chinese goods. The move sets off a 60-day period for the two sides to resolve their differences, and if not, the case can be brought before a three-judge panel at the Geneva-based trade body. However, the WTO dispute resolution process has been stymied in recent years as multiple U.S. administrations blocked appointments of judges on its appeals court. The impact of China's measures on U.S. exports may be limited. Though the U.S. is the biggest exporter of liquid natural gas globally, it does not export much to China. In 2023, the U.S. exported 173 2,247 million cubic feet of LNG to China, about 2.3% of its total natural gas exports, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. China imported less than 110,000 vehicles from the U.S. last year, although auto market analyst Zheng thinks the tariffs will be painful for GM, which is adding the Chevy Tahoe and GMC Yukon to its China lineup, and for Ford, which exports the Mustang and F-150 Raptor pickup. The response from China appears calculated and measured, said Stephen Dover, chief market strategist and head of the Franklin Templeton Institute, a financial research firm. However, he said the world is bracing for further impact. A risk is that this is the beginning of a tit-for-tat trade war, which could result in lower GDP growth everywhere, higher U.S. inflation, a stronger dollar, and upside pressure on the U.S. interest rates, Dover said. China announced export controls on several elements critical to the production of modern high-tech products. The measure took effect upon announcement on Tuesday. They include tungsten, tellurium, bismuth, molybdenum, and indium, many of which are designated as critical minerals by the U.S. Geological Survey, meaning they are essential to U.S. economic or national security that have supply chains vulnerable to disruption. The export controls are in addition to ones China placed in December on key elements such as gallium. They have a much more developed export control regime, Philip Luck, an economist at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former State Department official, said at a panel discussion on Monday. We depend on them for a lot of critical minerals, gallium, germanium, graphite, a host of others, he said. They could put some significant harm on our economy. China's State Administration for Market Regulation said Tuesday it is investigating Google on suspicion of violating antitrust laws. The announcement did not mention the tariffs, but came just minutes after Trump's 10% tariffs on China were to take effect. It is unclear how the probe will affect Google's operations. The company has long faced complaints from Chinese smartphone makers over its business practices surrounding the Android operating system, Gong said. Overall, Google has a smaller presence in China than many markets, with its search engine blocked like many other Western platforms. Google exited the Chinese market in 2010 after refusing to comply with censorship requests from the Chinese government and following a series of cyber attacks on the company. Google did not immediately comment. From our local and state news, Brendan Moore in Decatur. Decatur Council okays transit agreements. The city will take over operations of public transportation in rural Macon County and expand service into Forsyth and Mount Zion under three agreements approved by the Decatur City Council. The intergovernmental accord set the stage for a larger transformation of the city's public transportation system that is expected to streamline its fixed bus routes and introduce a concept known as microtransit. Under the terms, the city will deliver public transit service to the non-urbanized portions of Macon County. They will directly receive and administer federal and state transportation grant funds or earmarked for the county. In recent years, Macon County had been part of a seven-county consortium led by McLean County to provide rural transportation services. The county's contracted out with Shenoah-based Showbus. However, the company has not provided adequate service, resulting in the termination of the contract and subsequently the dissolution of the consortium, according to city transit officials. Decatur takes over rural transit on July 1st. The agreement between Forsyth and Decatur approved Monday would expand upon existing agreement that provides fixed bus route service to Hickory Point Mall. The agreement with Mount Zion would extend transit services to what's effectively been a public transportation desert in recent decades. Service to both Decatur suburbs is expected to lean heavily into the concept of microtransit, which is a first-mile, last-mile solution utilizing smaller branded vehicles to take riders from a designated stop near their homes to either stops near their final destinations or to fixed-route buses that could be used to complete their trips. It is viewed as a cost-effective way to fill in existing gaps in the public transportation network. Feed the fixed bus system during its hours of operation, and provide a reliable option for second shift workers in need of a ride home. Per the agreement, Forsyth and Mount Zion will each be responsible for picking up any costs not covered by state and federal grants. They are both also on the hook for providing funds for the purchase of a vehicle every 5 years. Such provisions offer protections for the city from potential cost overruns. We don't want to set up a transportation program with these other entities and then find that that burden or that cost is going to, at some point in the future, be placed on our city residents, said City Manager Tim Gleason. Other proposed changes to the city's public transit system include reducing the number of fixed route bus lines from 16 to 10, truncating and streamlining them to focus on the city center, and connections to the city's major commercial centers. Fixed route service would be extended to 8 p.m., with frequency being increased on popular routes to every 15 to 20 minutes on weekdays and 20 minutes on weekends. The overhaul, which could be rolled out this year, still needs council approval. In other news, the City Council voted to transfer $1.24 million from its capital projects fund to its neighborhood revitalization fund, a necessary step to reconcile overspending on demolitions in 2024. The city funded the demolition of 150 buildings in 2024, a breakneck pace of nearly three per week and a modern record. By comparison, just 36 structures were demolished in 21, 64 in 22, and 108 in 2023. The ramp up reflected both the need to stop and reverse the spread of blight in the urban core and the opportunity that came from the $34 million in federal American Rescue Plan funds the city was awarded in 21. However, the city ended up blowing through its demolition budget last year by about $3.2 million. Much of the overspending came due to three unexpected demolitions, two of them large, former school buildings, and the other being the two structures comprising the former YWCA downtown. The council reluctantly approved the demolition of the privately owned YWCA buildings at costs of $345,000 for the demolition and $249,000 for asbestos abatement because of safety concerns stemming from an exterior wall that had become unstable. The two school projects, the former Durfee School at Jasper Street and Grand Avenue and Centennial, Kopenbarger School at 1500 East Condit Street, cost the city more than $2.3 million. The demolitions of homes and other smaller structures typically falls under the $20,000 threshold needed for council approval. This means that while the larger demos receives council scrutiny, many flew under the radar. Members of the council expressed their displeasure with the overspending and told Gleason, who returned to Decatur last May, that city staff needed to have stronger internal controls. I have a hard time understanding how we could have a $3 million deficit of overspending, said Councilman Dennis Cooper. Obviously, someone did not do their job. I don't want any staff member to place on this agenda something that has not been budgeted, added Councilwoman Lisa Gregory. We have to trust the staff, said Councilman Chuck Cool. There's so much that comes at you on a city council. There's no way to know everything that's going on, and so there's got to be an amount of trust. And when the trust is violated, then it shakes you, and then it's hard to know where to go. Gleason said he appreciated the comments and that, believe me, I've got my marching orders. It's an area that I'm addressing, he said. Guarantee it will not happen again under my watch. In addition to the transfer from the capital fund, the gap was closed through $1.2 million the city has received from Archer Daniels Midland as part of the easement granting the agribusiness giant the ability to store liquefied carbon underneath city-owned land. Another $800,000 was transferred from tax increment financing districts, and $100,000 was from a $1 million state grant earmarked by State Senator Doris Turner from Springfield in 2023 for community development and violence reduction. Local briefs. Decatur police seek help in solving pair of burglaries. The Decatur Police Department is seeking the public's help in solving two burglaries at the same location, this week's crime of the week. According to a police press release, officers were contacted on January 5th and January 26th regarding the burglaries at GameStop located at 4641 East Maryland Street. Upon arrival, officers discovered no signs of forced entry, but several items were reported missing, said Officer Tucker Toole. Surveillance footage from both incidents revealed a white male suspect unlawfully entering the store using a key. The suspect is described as heavier set, wearing a black hooded sweatshirt, blue jeans, white shoes, dark-colored gloves, the report stated. Macon County Crime Stoppers has posted photos of the suspect. Anyone with information on the burglary should call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-TIPS. Crime Stoppers will pay $500 or more for information that leads to an arrest on the crime of the week. The Silhouettes to be on the Millican stage, February 7th. The Silhouettes are set to bring their unique shadow performance to Decatur on Friday, February 7th. The group, which uses light, color, video, photographs, dance, acting, and mime to tell their stories, will perform at 7:30 p.m. at Millican University's Kirkland Fine Arts Center, 1215 West Kirkland Drive, Decatur. Tickets ranging from $20 to $30 can be purchased at kirklandfinearts.com or by calling the ticket office at 217-424-6318. Children's tickets are $12. Based in Denver, Colorado, the Silhouettes were the first runner-up on America's Got Talent in 2011. Argenta Ice Fest set for this weekend. The Argenta Ice Fest will be from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, February 8th in downtown Argenta. More than 25 ice sculptures can be seen throughout the drive-through display taking place in the downtown area. All sculptures are carved by Olympic gold medalist ice carver and Argenta native Eric Kendall, as well as other artists. Carving demonstrations will be at 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. Other events include children's games, food vendors, and a 50-50 drawing. For more information, visit the Argenta Ice Fest Facebook page. Mueller Museum to offer guided tours this weekend. Hieronymus Mueller Museum, 420 West El Dorado Street, Decatur, will be offering staff-guided tours for the public at 2 p.m. Saturday, February 8th and Saturday, March 8th. Tickets are $5 per person. According to the museum director, the guided tours are the first of their kind for the local museum. Museum staff have offered guided tours for privately scheduled groups for years, but we want to extend that invitation to everyone, says museum director Catherine Unruh. This is a new, rare opportunity to explore the exhibit with museum staff. The guided tours will take approximately 45 minutes. During that time, we'll explore how Hieronymus Mueller, his family, and the company he founded impacted the water and gas industries and the community of Decatur and beyond, Unruh said. Tickets will be available to the first visitors at the door on the days of the tour. Space is limited. Regular hours for the museum are from 1 to 4 Tuesdays through Saturdays. Admission is $3 for adults, $1 per child, and free for all Mueller employees and retirees. For more information, visit MuellerMuseum.org or the museum's Facebook page. And now part one from our opinion page, Help Wanted, from Nick Gillespie, editor-at-large of Reason Magazine and Reason.com, wrote this article for InsideSources.com. America needs more foreign workers to fill critical jobs. Outrage over immigration is a primary reason Donald Trump and the Republicans have returned to power. Just before the presidential election, 56% of Americans told Pew Research they support mass deportation of undocumented immigrants. In his first days in office, Trump signed executive orders declaring a national emergency at America's southern border, allowing troops to deploy there, and ending birthright citizenship as defined in the 14th Amendment. Many of these actions won't stick legally or prove popular with voters. Deep down, Americans love immigrants because we see ourselves in them. According to the National Park Service, 40% of us trace our ancestry through Ellis Island, the East Coast immigration station that operated between 1892 and 1954. We want an orderly process where people are vetted, barred from most taxpayer-funded transfer programs, and able to work and pay taxes legally. A federal judge appointed by President Ronald Reagan immediately blocked Trump's action on birthright citizenship, calling it a blatantly unconstitutional order. The same Pew poll, showing a majority in favor of mass deportations, reveals even more significant numbers of Americans in favor of admitting more high-skilled workers, 79%, letting international college grads stay, 77%, and letting immigrants married to citizens remain, 58%. And 64% of Americans think undocumented immigrants should be allowed to stay if they meet specific requirements, such as passing a background check or having a job. Even among Trump's biggest supporters, a fierce fight has emerged over immigrants on H-1B visas, which are granted to 85,000 highly educated foreign workers annually. While MAGA activists want the program scrapped, Elon Musk, the head of Tesla and SpaceX, who is guiding Trump's Department of Government Efficiency, has said he will go to war in support of the visas. Trump has declared he likes both sides of the argument, but favors expanding H-1Bs because you've got to get the best people. Trump's ambivalence reflects that of the American people. Despite being a nation of immigrants, we have never been comfortable with newcomers. All of the fears about current immigration levels are either exaggerated or flat out wrong. While the southern border was egregiously poorly managed for most of President Joe Biden's uninspiring presidency, unlawful border crossings dropped to a four-year low at the end of last year. Vice President J.D. Vance's unfounded campaign claims that Haitian refugees were spreading disease and eating cats in Springfield, Ohio, were flatly contradicted by city officials. As Cato Institute policy analyst Alex Nourastas has documented, legal and illegal immigrants have lower crime rates than native-born Americans. In any case, violent crime is declining nationally and is lower than it was in 2020. Nor are immigrants stealing American jobs, either at the low end or the high end of the employment market. Since November 21, the unemployment rate has been at or below 4%. Unskilled immigrant workers pick crops, staff kitchens, do domestic jobs, and work construction. All job markets that post many more jobs than are ever filled. The average H-1B visa job in tech pays about $132,000 a year, and scant evidence suggests employers pay foreign workers less than Native Americans. When Trump defended the H-1B program with tech titans such as Larry Ellison of Oracle, he stressed, "People like Larry, he needs engineers, like nobody's ever needed them. As the low unemployment rate shows, we need more workers, not fewer." Immigrants tend to be self-starters and ambitious. It's understandable that after a pandemic, high inflation, weak leadership, and economic and social anxiety, that Americans would be ambivalent about immigrants. But today's newcomers deserve the opportunities our grandparents and great-grandparents had as they came through Ellis Island and caused just as much fear as today's do on the surface. Their presence benefits us even more than it does them. In our food section today, we have recipes for Valentine's Day. We have dark heart brownies. A grilled salmon with a green salad and roasted cauliflower with a cool dill sauce. A skillet tomato cheddar basil beans recipe. Sweet potatoes that melt in your mouth. On this date in history, in 1917, the U.S. Congress passed the Immigration Act of 1917 over President Woodrow Wilson's veto, which curtailed Asian immigration and mandated literacy testing. In 1918, more than 200 people were killed during World War I when the Cunard liner SS Tuscania, which was transporting over 2,000 American troops to Europe, was torpedoed by a German U-boat in the Irish Sea. In 1971, Apollo 14 astronauts Alan Shepard and Edgar Mitchell stepped onto the surface of the moon in the first of two lunar excursions. In 1973, services were held at Arlington National Cemetery for U.S. Army Colonel William B. Nold, the last official American combat casualty before the Vietnam ceasefire took effect. We'll take a short break now. and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, February 5th. Please stay tuned.